Hi, it's Mark Bittman. Welcome to Food. As always, you can reach out to us at food@markbittman.com. We'd love to hear what you think, and we will respond to you. Please subscribe to the podcast, rate us as highly as you think appropriate, and please also consider subscribing to our fabulous thrice-weekly newsletter, The Bittman Project. That's at bittmanproject.com. Okay, back in a sec.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Have you ever bought something, owned something that really inspired you to up your game? A tennis racket, a new pair of running shoes, a new piece of cooking equipment that made you just want to cook your brains out? I know that when I first started cooking on induction burners, I just couldn't stop. It was so much fun. When we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Some of the features that are available on this car include Dynamic Sky Panorama Glass Roof, Front Row Massaging Seats, you know you want that. Available 33-inch all-terrain tires, which you will want when you check out the multi-terrain select. These are really great features, the kind of features that will make you proud and happy to own a Lexus GX. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. My old friend Jacques Pepin, I was just writing about him actually, has a new book out called Cooking My Way, Recipes and Techniques for Economical Cooking, which focuses on how to save money, time, and effort in the kitchen. You know, I want to say that Jacques is obviously a famous chef and a brilliant one. He's also the best home cook I've ever met. It's just incredible. He gets everything. And it's like, he's a chef with a home cook sensibility. He's an amazing, amazing character and has never stopped being inventive and creative. We had him on the podcast about a year ago, and it was an episode that many people loved. So I thought now with this new book coming out, it would be a good time to bring it back. I was writing about it because I think he was the first famous food person I ever met. I actually met Craig Claiborne earlier, but Craig Claiborne didn't really talk to me, but Jacques did. And I think I was just 34, 35. We had a mutual friend in Connecticut who invited me to dinner with some people, including Jacques, but Jacques with no last name. And he turned out to be Jacques Pepin. Pierre Frenet was there too. They were very good friends. Over the years, Jacques and I both lived in Connecticut and we became closer. I think he's one of the wisest people in the food industry. Thoughtful, artistic, literate. He writes brilliantly, articulate, but very skilled, very inventive. His quick cooking has a depth of knowledge that no one else's has. He's also the guy who said to me, a recipe is like a river. You can never put your foot in it in the same way twice. And If you think about that, it's wisdom. Anyway, how great is all that? Here we go. Enjoy. When we first met, and I've quoted this conversation so many times that probably I'm getting it wrong, but when we first met, you said to me that a recipe is like a moment in time or like a river, that it's never the same twice. And I'm wondering, first of all, did I get that right? And second of all, can you unpack that a little bit for us?
Yeah, I think it's pretty accurate, you know. I mean, this is probably the not the problem, but the fact that when you write a recipe, you write it down according to what's going on at that time. I mean, there is never a chicken which is exactly the same amount of fat, too, and you cook with gas, you cook with electric, cast iron, enamel. You know, you're in a good mood, you're in a bad mood. It's summer, it's winter, it's humid, it's not humid. So there's absolutely no way, to a certain extent, the recipe can be the same. So when you write a recipe down, by definition, you relate what's going on that day. You put A and B together, and it looks a bit dry, so you put a third of a cup of water in it. You may never have to put a third of a cup of water when you do it again. The point is that you have no choice to do that. So the problem is that you write that recipe down, and it becomes, this is the way you do that recipe. So on a philosophical level, at least, the fact of writing a recipe probably destroys it. You know, because that's it, you've done it. But still, I would tell people, when you follow a recipe, whoever wrote the recipe, you should follow it exactly the way it is, at least the first time. And if you like it, you're likely to do it again. And the next time you do it, maybe again, the same. By the third time, you say, I put a bit more tomato in there, I put this, that too. And eventually you massage it enough so it becomes your own. And maybe a year later, 2 years, you don't even remember where it come from. That's how you do that recipe. And that's the right process for me, that of making a recipe. You know.
Kate has a similar question, but I will just say that has had such a profound influence on me. I think we had that conversation, honestly think we had that conversation in 1985. So that's 40 years ago.
Yeah.
So I actually have a question about recipes too, because my sister and I we're both cooks. We cook very differently. She's super comfortable improvising, and I have always been sort of a slave to recipes. But recently, I've definitely become more confident and have sort of experimented more and done my own thing. There was a bit in your new book where you write, and I'm quoting you here, as a professional cook, I always start a new recipe with an idea of how to combine one ingredient with another. This idea may have been triggered by what I see in my garden or at the market, or what I ate at a restaurant or with a friend, or by reading about food. So I'm finally getting to a place where I think about those two initial ingredients. And you're, of course, way more evolved than that and can build those two ingredients into a fully fledged dish. But I'd love to hear a little more about that process, because I do think it's an interesting concept for home cooks who want to move past cooking from recipes, so who sort of have gotten past that initial recipe level and are ready to really be more creative in the kitchen.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I don't agree with the fact that I've spoken to many people who say, you know, I never follow a recipe. I take a recipe and right away they change it too. And I don't think it's fair to whoever wrote the recipe, because you don't really know what it should taste like if you've never done it. That's what I said. At least once or twice, you should do it exactly the way it is written in that particular recipe. Then after, you go on your own, of course. There is absolutely no way that your taste can be exactly the same than mine. You know, if I take you to 10 greatest restaurants in the world, I'm going to pick 4 maybe of those things that are extraordinary, and maybe 4 say they are very, very good. And a couple of them, I don't really get it. And you may, of course, have a totally different reaction. Ultimately, my reaction is purely a narcissistic reflection on my own taste. The one that I picked up coincides exactly with my sense of taste, with my sense of aesthetic, and so forth. So I pick up those. It cannot be the same for you. And this is the funny part of it, because when I teach at BU, for example, I do like the perfect meal, one of the dishes that I used to do, a roast chicken, a boiled potato, and a salad. Then they're all supposed to do it. I have 15 students. Well, I know before they start, I say, please, you have the basket, you have all your ingredients. I know you're going to blow my mind and make it different. But don't, you know, torture yourself to make it different, because whether you like it or not, I am going to have 15 different chicken today. A couple of them overcooked, a couple undercooked, some burnt, some this, some cold, some hot. But it will be different because you cannot really do it exactly the same than the guy next to you. So you don't have to torture yourself to be different than that. Just cook according to your own guts and go and see what you can do to be more creative. Or I don't know if we use that word in the kitchen. It's a question of time too. It's a question of knowledge, a question of doing and doing it again. The thing is that for me as an apprentice, you know, I was in apprenticeship in 1949. So, and at that time, it was a way of learning. You know, when you're a kid, 13 years old, the chef said, do that. You would never have said why. If you had said why, you would have said, because I just told you. That's what about. And that's how you work for at least a year. And one day, the chef told me, tomorrow you start at the stove. I said, me? I didn't think that I knew anything at the stove. And through some type of osmosis, yes, I learned. So that was one way of learning. But, you know, the repeat and repeat and repeat of those movements, of those techniques, it becomes part of your DNA. And that's why I can look at, do a television show, look at the camera and think in terms of the texture of the ingredient or the color or this, that. I don't have to worry about my hand working. And that's very good. I transcend the level at which I have to think about those. So those techniques for me are very important. That being said, I know a fair amount of chefs who are very good technicians, can run a kitchen very well, and they got good food costs, and are relatively lousy cook. So again, you know, the techniques are important. Certainly, if you see someone like Thomas Keller or Daniel Boulud, they are very good technicians, but they are more than that. You know, they have creativity, they have constants, they have many other qualities, you know, to bring to the level at which they are. So.
I'm curious, you've been cooking, as you just said, for 73 years or whatever. What are you cooking these days? What are you enjoying when you're in the kitchen?
Well, you know, certainly now I have a lot of tomato in my garden. Last night I had Swiss chard from the garden, some tomato, and I probably do less and less my age now with my garden. But I have a lot of arugula, I have salad too, so... Ultimately, yes, I had a friend for dinner last night. I did a piece of chicken, and we did well. I have a friend who brought me 50 oysters, so we had oysters to start with, and we had a piece of chicken, some arugula, salad, and some Swiss chard from the garden, and some pear for dessert. That was, you know, nothing really very special, but certainly also the point is that I know I'm going to be 87 years old, so my metabolism is quite different than it used to be. And as a young chef, you tend to add and to add, and maybe to add to the plate, maybe more in the book I did, like The Art of Cooking and so forth. As you get older, then you tend to retreat from the plate to be left with something more essential. Without too much embellishment. You know, I don't need, if I have a tomato out of the garden, get a perfect ripe color, temperature, and a bit of salt on top, olive oil, that's it.
I loved reading your new book, Art of the Chicken, and I don't think you even need to be someone who's interested in food to read it, because the stories are also picturesque, and there are actually a couple of them that we wanted to ask you about, because I actually didn't know that your mom ran a restaurant and that you grew up there in the restaurant. How old were you when you started going in? And is that where you learned to cook?
Well, yeah, I mean, we live there. We live in the same place. So it's not like you go to the restaurant. You know, I don't remember ever my two brother and I coming back from school and telling my mother or my father, I'm bored. Say, you're what? Are you kidding? When we came back from school, no one ever asked you to do your homework. That was your problem. But everyone kind of grab you to peel potato or to wash the bottle in the cellar or to do something. It's age 6 or 7. So we try to hide and do our work. There is no way that I would have said, oh, I'm bored. So what? Okay, great. So, you know, I don't know, some age 5, 6, we work. We did one thing or another, carrying stuff or, you know, the bottle from the cellar or washing the bottle or doing when they are all picking up the egg from the chicken or feeding the chicken or whatever.
My six-year-old asked me today if there was some work that he could do to make money. So I think I'll take a page. I think I'll take a page from your mother's book. And
yeah, it's pretty fascinating. I mean, next week for the foundation, I have a foundation. I'm cooking in New York on Friday. The Hot Bread Kitchen, I think it's called. It's part of a community kitchen that we work with my foundation for that type of stuff, mostly my son-in-law. But in any case, I've been to those places, mostly black kids and black or brown. And I've been amazed sometimes, we're talking about the chicken there. On some kid, 6, 8 years old, for them, a chicken is rectangular with plastic on top. It doesn't have feet or head. It doesn't exist. So it's pretty scary. At some point, and without any question, the kid, when Claudine was a year and a half old, I hold her in my arms, she stirred the pot, I said, "Hey, mélange," so she, quote, ate it because she made it. That. And likewise with my granddaughter, she sits next to me at the store when she was on a little bench at the counter when she was 4 or 5 years old. And I said, "Okay, get some parsley." So that's not parsley, that's chive, tested, that's parsley. Okay, that. They gave me those tomatoes. You think they arrived? Did you smell them? Those pears, you think those pears are any smell? She touched it. She goes to, and bring me the salad is washed, it's clean. So it established a kind of platform, and of course you sit down and you share the meal, which is even the better part of it, and that continue a conversation which often moves somewhere else. And that's the beauty of it. But you cannot have the kid eating different than you do, eating hot dog or stuff or whatever the kid eat, both food, and you do a rack of lamb for your guest, and the kid eat different. And after the kid, the first communion or bar mitzvah or whatever, you move them at the table and say, "Okay, now you eat with us." Kids are not eating that stuff, So yeah, it has to start. When Claudine was small, I don't think I ever bought once a baby food. Whatever we cook that night, before I put too much salt or pepper in it, I put it in the food processor or in the blender at the time and make a puree to So she was used to clam and spaghetti, whether it was in a puree, but she was used to that taste when she was 5, 6 years old, So, yeah.
We did that too.
I've already messed that up, but I'm trying to get back on track.
Okay, stay tuned for more from me, Jacques, and Kate.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Have you ever bought something, owned something that really inspired you to up your game? A tennis racket, a new pair of running shoes, a new piece of cooking equipment that made you just want to cook your brains out? I know that when I first started cooking on induction burners, I just couldn't stop. It was so much fun. When we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Some of the features that are available on this car include Dynamic Sky Panorama Glass Roof, Front Row Massaging Seats, you know you want that. Available 33-inch all-terrain tires, which you will want when you check out the Multi-Terrain Select. These are really great features, the kind of features that will make you proud and happy to own a Lexus GX. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. Hi, folks. We have a new sponsor and an interesting one. We all take about 20,000 breaths a day, and Americans spend about 90% of our time indoors. That indoor air that we breathe can be up to 100 times more polluted than outdoor air, according to the EPA. And indoor air pollutants can cause respiratory symptoms like sneezing, congestion, scratchy throat, and even more serious health problems like lung and heart disease. So, what's the solution? Introducing Air Doctor, the air purifier that filters out 99.99% of dangerous contaminants so your lungs don't have to. This includes allergens, pollen, pet dander, dust mites, mold spores, and even bacteria and viruses. Air Doctor comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund. Head to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code BITMAN, B-I-T-T-M-A-N, and you'll receive up to $300 off air purifiers. Exclusive to our listeners, you will also receive a free 3-year warranty on any unit, which is an additional $84 value. Lock in this special offer by going to airdoctorpro.com. That's airdoctorpro.com and use the promo code BITMAN.
I understand that many chefs have horror stories about kitchens that they've worked in, but I was particularly amazed by the Chef Coulet story about the grilling.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
Can you talk about it? Do you mind recounting it for us? You were 16.
Yeah, I was barely 16. Yeah, I was 16. I finished apprenticeship at 16 and did the season in Aix-les-Bains, you know, at the Hotel d'Albion there. And, you know, the season was 7 days a week, 4 months, you know, no day off, because the hotel is open 4 months. And I was sent to the first time I went, I was sent to the grill. So the grill there was two grills, one for fish, one for meat, with charcoal, of course, too. And but I mean, the chef there, that old guy, was like a kind of dictator. I mean, we had to turn everything with our finger, you know, no touch, no metal has to touch it, no puncture with fork or whatever. So, you know, we had a bowl of water, you dip your finger in the water, and right away, up, grab the thing, turn it, put it back your feet in the water, but still, my tip of my finger was kind of white by the end of the summer, you know, all burned. Especially, I remember at the time we were doing a mixed grill, and the mixed grill was a little lamb chop, a little slice of calf's liver, a slice of bacon, a tomato and a mushroom. All of that was on the plate that has to be turned. So that was kind of ridiculous. That guy had a little motorcycle, an Albion. Yeah, and and since the hotel was on the hill, we could hear him in the morning coming here. That thing made a lot of noise, and by that time, no one was in the kitchen. Just hearing it from the bottom of the hill, everyone jump out of bed, get into the kitchen, he came in, take a look around, was there, then he went to change in his office, you know. So where we are.
It's like an alarm clock.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, this, you learn like that with some people who are at the wedding. I mean, certainly at the time, it was pretty common to get kicked in the ass or get a thing like this now, which is a bit different. Now you don't learn this way.
No, when I was young, only French people wanted to be chefs, or pretty much only French people wanted to be chefs. Certainly no one my age ever talked about becoming a chef, let alone a food writer, which didn't even exist, of course, at the time. How do you think things have evolved in kitchens since your experiences with as an apprentice, as a young chef or young would-be chef?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I haven't worked in France in decades, you know, in any kitchen, so I wouldn't, but certainly it has changed now. People, maybe one of the biggest changes would be that more women in the kitchen or that type of things too. But not really for me, because that's actually where I come from. It was only women in the kitchen.
Right.
You know, and frankly, even after that, you know, I've done 31 cookbook, like 8 publisher. I have never had a man who was my editor. I have done 13 series of 26 shows with PBS. 13 series of 26 shows. That's hundreds and hundreds of shows. It was always a woman who was my producer, executive producer, too. For 8 years, almost 10 years in the New York Times, I had a column, too. So I think I had 3 editors every 3-4 years. It was already a woman. I opened the French Culinary Institute. I was hired by Dorothée Kahn, was a woman, but my boss. And I've been teaching at Boston University for 34 years now. Rebecca Allison, who hired me and was my boss for all those years. So in a sense, for me, I've always worked with women much more than with men. So, but yes, certainly the kitchen is different.
We want to explore history a little bit more. You were, I don't know how many people, and people will know this when they read Art of the Chicken, but you were Charles de Gaulle personal chef, and then you moved to the States where you were offered and turned down a job as John Kennedy's personal chef. And you went to work for Howard Johnson's with Pierre Frenet. Can you talk a little bit about that decision and that experience?
Yes. I mean, you know, when I worked with 3 presidents under the Fourth Republic in France between 56, 58, the end of 58, of course, was never come to have some kudos in the dining room. It didn't exist. I had never had an interview with television, barely existed. But a magazine or newspaper, or that did not exist, period, at all. The cook was in the stove behind the kitchen. And if anyone came to the kitchen because something went wrong and you were going to get yelled at, that was about the end of it. You know, I served people like Eisenhower, Nehru, Tito, Macmillan. Those were the head of state, you know, at the time. Kind of sneak behind the door to try to take a peek of them. But that was about it. So when I came to New York and worked at the Pavillon, and then because of the story at the Pavillon, so it ended up being at La Caravelle that Roger Fessaguet called me. They need a chef at the White House. They want to have you and so forth. And I had no inkling and no idea, to be truthful, of the potential of publicity or stuff, because of what I had been exposed to was totally different. In fact, at that time, if I recall exactly, it was a woman who was chef at the White House before René Verdon too. No one would have known her name too. It took exactly the same thing here that it was in France. No one knew what was with a lady from the South somewhere. So we end up, they called me once and they called me another time, a couple of weeks later. And I said, no, I had started studying at Columbia too, and I had some friends in New York already. I didn't really want to change, but to be truthful, I had no idea, inkling of that type of potential. I ended up going to Howard Johnson. You know, I learned about American eating habits, about chemistry of food, about production, about many things like that. Eventually, I opened a potagerie 10 years after Howard Johnson. I worked there 10 years. I opened a potagerie on Fifth Avenue. Then I was the consultant for the Russian Tea Room a number of years. Then I opened the World Trade Center with Joe Bond, set up the commissary and the whole food operation. I would never have been able to do any of those jobs without the training of Howard Johnson. As a French chef, I knew nothing about production, marketing, American English. So Howard Johnson was very, very beneficial. It was very good. It was another world. You know? So, but it was maybe based on some type of conviction or whatever. No, it was just because I didn't realize what the potential was, I guess.
This is not a question. I just want to give you an opportunity to talk about Pierre if you'd like to do that. If you don't want to do that, that's fine. We move on.
Of course. You know, when I came to America, I arrived. I came on a student boat and I took the train from Montreal up to Grand Central, took a cab to get to a guy who had a restaurant called La Toque Blanche. There was kind of my sponsor too. And the day after, he took me to the pavilion. And already there, I came with all my certificate in France. You know, you show your certificate, you work in quality of such and such from that amount to that amount, whether it was with De Gaulle or with Plaza, and I have all my certificate. He didn't want to see them. He said, no, it doesn't matter. You work here, there, too, fine. So I said, chef, to become, he said, no, Pierre, you call me Pierre. I said, well, already, it has changed within France, just the attitude and all that of the chef. And I started at the pavilion right away. And of course, I became very friends with Pierre and his family and so forth at the time. And then by extension with Craig. I mean, you know, I knew Helen McCauley, who was the food editor of McCall, House Beautiful, live on 50 Saigon, I live on 50th Street. And I met Helen. She came to become my surrogate mother, if you want. Through Helen, I met James Beard. And I met Helen actually through Craig, because Craig came to review the pavilion and did and talked with Pierre and after talked to me. So 6 months after I was here, I knew the trinity of cooking in America, which was James Beard, Julia Child, and Craig LeBeau. So the world of food was really very small, very, very small at the time. I didn't know one white American chef. You know, I live in New York. All the chefs that I knew at the big hotel, restaurant, Hilton Hotel, were Italian, French, a lot of Swiss, French, German too, and that's it. The first American chef that I met was Howard Johnson. When Mr. Johnson said, you have to work in a restaurant for a few months, well, I went on Queens Boulevard there and get into the Howard Johnson Queens Boulevard for like 3 months, whatever. You do as you do in the kitchen. You know, you show your what you can do and, you know, start flipping burger and working on the thing that I hadn't worked on before, you know, mashed potato, brown potato, you know, hot dog, burger, eggs, stuff. You know. So, yes, I learned a great deal, too.
You've had incredible experiences, amazing accomplishments, gone past where most chefs could ever hope to go, and yet you've done something that almost no chefs have done before, which is write good recipes, and done that thousands and thousands of times. Was there a transitional period in there? Because, you know as well as I do that most chefs don't write good recipes, but you do.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I didn't have one book. I had the Repertoire de la Cuisine, the tiny thing, because we had it in Paris in my pocket when you work at different restaurants. So where is that garnish? That's about the only book I ever had. I came to America, and then I started, and had Howard Johnson. Then I started setting up recipe. That's when I was director of research and development. So I was there to start making recipe too. With Pierre, we started with 3 chicken and we finished with 3,000 pounds of chicken, you know, doing a pot pie or whatever. But then that was a long apprenticeship of 10 years for me to make recipe, to organize it too. And I think I'm pretty Cartesian this way. So I like to organize and clear and so forth. So I've always was interested in this. So yes, but that's at Howard Johnson that I learned to write recipe, no question.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Were you horrified by American food when you got here?
Not really, actually. You know, I live on 50th and 1st Avenue on top of La Toque Blanche, that restaurant that I had there. And my first exposure was there to go to a restaurant, to go to a supermarket, which just happened. It was relatively new, the supermarket. I thought it was fantastic. I didn't have the butcher. They, everything was under the same roof, except all of a sudden I realized there was a lot of package. There was great meat. There was beef. There was lobster. There were a rack of lamb, so very big too, but there was one salad, iceberg. There was no leek. There was no there was no shallot. There was no barely parsley. There was no oriental vegetable. And I remember saying, where is the mushroom? Aisle 5, that was canned mushroom. You got to go to a specialty store to get mushroom in New York. So, you know, it was another world, you know, very different than what I've heard. And you look at the supermarket now, they've been as beautiful as they are today. You know, it's a different world.
What are you having for dinner tonight?
Well, that's a good point. I hadn't decided that. I have to look what I have in my freezer. I know I'm going to have tomato because I basically have tomato all the time now.
We are all eating tomatoes every day right now.
Yep.
And I think I'm going to have a piece of fish. I had some fish at Mahi-Mahi in my freezer. So, and maybe some clam because I had some oyster and clam someone brought me. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, that does it for us, Jacques. Thank you so much for your time. Good luck with the new book. I love seeing you. I love talking to you. I love you. You're the best.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And happy cooking and have a great day.
Okay. Thank you, Jacques. You too.
Take care. Thank you.
I have such a nice recipe for you today from Jacques. I wish I had gotten him to read it because, you know, it's so much fun to listen to him. But they are called eggs Jeannette, and it's not a formal recipe. It's an informal one, as so many of his are. I am just going to read it, no fake accent, straight from the book. I christened Maman's most famous and perhaps my family's favorite egg dish, eggs Jeannette, after her. Mama split hard-cooked eggs in half lengthwise and removed the yolks. She made a persillade by chopping garlic and parsley together and mashed it into the yolks, along with salt and pepper. She added a few tablespoons of milk to blend the ingredients, and then she spooned them back into the hollowed-out whites, setting aside a few tablespoons worth for a sauce. This is me, Mark, interrupting now. So basically you have garlic, parsley, deviled eggs at this point. No mayonnaise, interestingly enough. Now I'm back to Jacques' voice. I suppose she could have stopped there and had very good stuffed eggs. But Mama elevated the dish to something truly special by frying the eggs stuffed side down in a skillet with a dash of butter or oil. They browned beautifully after a couple of minutes. To complete the dish, she topped the eggs with a sauce made from the yolk mixture she reserved along with Dijon-style mustard, peanut oil, and a dribble of vinegar. There you have it, eggs Jeannette. Enjoy that.
Thank you again to my friend Jacques Pepin for sharing his memories and insight. You can follow him on Instagram at Jacques Pepin Foundation. Cooking My Way is out now. Thanks also to my co-host and producer, Kate Bittman, and to our engineer, Davis Lloyd. Thanks to you for listening. Again, food at markbittman.com or bittmanproject.com. And we will see you next week when we will have somebody awesome.
Up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.